Leggings are so much more than just workout clothes. Great leggings are truly a necessity, but that doesn't mean they should cost a fortune. And that's why I'm glad I found Fabletics. They make the world's best leggings. And for me, that's my favorite thing they sell. The ones I like the best are the high-waisted power hold leggings. They are slimming and comfortable, and they work for yoga or high-intensity workouts or lounging around the house or chasing your kids. They support you in any of those activities. The other thing I really love about my tops and my leggings from Fabletics, I can go from lunch to yoga and I was still appropriately dressed in both places because these clothes are cute enough to go out to lunch or go out somewhere in without looking like you're just wearing your workout clothes everywhere. You can shop as a guest on Fabletics.com or you can become a VIP. The VIPs save 40 to 50% off retail prices. I signed up as a VIP and it's awesome. I go on every month. I get to see what new styles are there. If it's something I don't want, I just pass for the month and I pay nothing. It's like your favorite store offering you discount on all the merchandise for the rest of your life. And all you have to do is visit their website once a month to check out what's new. There's no pressure to buy. I love being a VIP and you will too. Go to fabletics.com/site now to get two pairs of their amazing leggings for just $24. Seriously, these are the world's best leggings. They are a $99 value, and you'll get two for only $24 when you join at fabletics.com/site. That's fabletics.com/site.
On the afternoon of Saturday, August 26, 1995, 23-year-old Heather Teague went to Newburgh Beach to do some sunbaking. It was an isolated area and she would be the only person on the beach that day. A man on the other side of the river was looking through his telescope at the same time and what he saw was a terrifying sight. Heather was being abducted by gunpoint by a large bearded man dressed in a wig and mosquito netting. Two suspects have been considered for this case, but no substantial evidence and no body means no charges have been laid. And even now, more than 20 years later, Heather's mother refuses to give up until her killer is brought to justice. Hello and welcome to Insight. My name is Ali and here with me is the lovely Charlie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's getting colder and rainier here, so which I'm loving. I've been binge watching Evil Genius and I know I'm behind the times and most people have already watched it, but if you're like me and haven't, I highly recommend it. Before we begin this week's episode, thank you to Aaron from Generation Y in Framed Podcasts for coming on the episode on Monday. Charlie and I are both massive fans of Generation Y and will be your Framed, and Aaron coming on our little podcast was definitely a highlight of this year. And this week's episode is a listener suggestion. We do take all of your suggestions and we do appreciate them. And we will get to them all at some point. This week's case was suggested to us very early on and by a whole bunch of people. But the first two were Jane and Krista, so thank you. Heather Danielle Teague was born April 25, 1972, and grew up in the same area where she continued to live as an adult with her mother Sarah in Spotsville, which is in Henderson County, Kentucky. In 1995, Heather was 23 years old and a graduate from Western Kentucky University. She'd been having a rough year. She had an on-and-off relationship with an older man who was apparently some 20 years older than her, and she had started to experiment with drugs. And then in late August, she was fired from her job.
On the afternoon of Saturday, August 26th, 1995, Heather left home with plans to go to nearby Newburgh Beach, which is along the Ohio River. It was a warm day, summer was ending, and she wanted to take advantage of the weather while she still could and do some sunbathing. As we see in cases like this, where we lean on newspaper reports from the time, things get reported as they're revealed, and some of those things turn out to be inaccurate or in conflict with things that are reported later on. And so we hit our first conflicting bit of the story here. Some say this beach was a popular area, and that being it was a Saturday afternoon, you would think there would be at least a few people to witness Heather's abduction. But others refer to the area as isolated. To me, it seems like the answer is probably somewhere in the middle. The beach was popular for partiers enough that local farmers whose properties bordered the beach were complaining. But Heather had gone to an area that was more solitary, a more solitary stretch of the beach. And this seems to be backed up by the fact that there was only one witness to the abduction, and he wasn't even on the beach at the time. As for this witness who wasn't on the beach, let's first set up the beach. The beach is a fairly narrow riverfront beach with trees behind it and farmland just past the tree line. On the other side of the Ohio River from where Heather was sunbathing is the town of Newburgh, Indiana. Tim Walthall was watching through his high-powered telescope from his home. It was about a quarter to one in the afternoon, and he saw Heather sunbathing on a chaise lounge. Tim panned over to the nearby woods, and he saw a man run out. This man ran towards Heather and dragged her at gunpoint back to the woods from where he came. Tim didn't call the police for about 25 minutes after seeing this. He was waiting for the man and Heather to come back, thinking, was this her boyfriend or a friend? And it was just really a prank that someone was pulling on her. From every report I've read, it's also been reported that Tim was calm while on the phone with 911, so he wasn't terribly alarmed, and that's understandable if he still thought maybe this was a joke, but he was just calling just to be sure. But then again, holding someone at gunpoint is an interesting joke to pull on someone.
So what did Tim report that he saw? He reported seeing a shirtless, jean-clad man run up to Heather, and he was seen pointing a gun at her before dragging her away to the nearby wooded area where he came from. This man would later be described as a white man, quite tall, standing about 6 feet or 183 centimetres tall. He was a solid build of about 200 to 250 pounds or 90 to 113 kilograms. He had brown hair and a bushy brown beard. Apparently in the 911 call made by Tim, he said that the man was also wearing a wig and or mosquito netting at the time of the abduction. I have seen it reported as either as well as both in news articles. But if he was wearing a wig and mosquito netting to hide his identity, I'm not sure how Tim knew that his hair colour was brown, or if he had hair at all for that matter. That's unless the netting was transparent, or the wig was put on his head very poorly, or maybe he just assumed that the man had brown hair because he could see that was the colour of his beard. This 911 call is called into question for a number of reasons. But just remember all that for now, because we will go into more of that call in theories.
Tim would sit down with a sketch artist. I've read that it was the Monday after the abduction, so 2 days later. Allie has seen it said it was 3 or 4 days after the abduction, which is quite a long time when we talk about memory recall, which we've discussed in previous episodes. Especially back in episode 18 on Bible John, we went into detail about how quickly memories fade and alter, and the difficulty of recalling and accurately communicating individual facial features. It's basically we don't see faces as individual parts, we see it as the whole, but when we do a sketch, we're trying to recall the individual features. It's especially hard if someone doesn't have a particularly significant feature that would make them stand out. But even then, these significant features can be exaggerated, or a little gap in the teeth could seem larger. A certain shape of nose may seem exaggerated. All of this is affected within minutes, and it gets more and more pronounced as time goes on. In a stressful situation like witnessing an abduction where there's so much going on, or a situation like this with Tim where he was confused over what was happening, that would also hamper recall. Whether it was forgetting parts or filling in missing parts, our memories are much more malleable than we like to think. Tim also reported in this interview that when he was looking through his telescope before the abduction, he saw a red and white Ford Bronco in the beach parking lot parked next to Heather's car. There was another reported sighting on this truck, however, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. It will come up again when we talk about the suspects.
So we know that Tim Walthall contacted the police about 25 minutes after the abduction. And that's when helicopters were used to look from above through the wooded area for evidence, and search and rescue dogs were deployed in the beach area in the search for Heather. The only trace of her that was found, and all that has been found of her since, was a red plaid bathing suit that was found not far from where she was last seen. Now again, there is conflicting reports here. I have also read that there was only a piece of bathing suit found. So I'm assuming from this that she was wearing a bikini and what was found was the top or the bottom of the bathing suit. The FBI file for this case is available online, and what that reports is that Heather was sunbathing partially nude. So I think it could be taken from that that she was sunbathing topless and the top was left behind when she was taken. That makes the most sense to me anyway. Investigators also found her blue Chase beach chair. According to the FBI file, other items were found that point to a crime being committed, but what these items are have never been released publicly. No other trace of Heather has ever been found, and her case remains active to this day.
There were suspects in this case. As we mentioned earlier, the eyewitness remembered seeing a red and white Ford Bronco parked next to Heather's car. Then a local farmer came forward, and this farmer was experiencing some vandalism, and he had installed a security camera system. And I read that a couple of the farmers in the area had done this, a lot due to this for vandalism, others due to the partiers coming and going. This camera caught Heather Teague's car with the same red and white Ford Bronco parked next to it in his footage. When investigators saw this footage, it threw up some red flags for them. Now, again, like we've already seen in the reporting on this case, there are some conflicting stories over when the next event happened, whether it happened before or after Heather was abducted. According to an Associated Press article from September of 1995, so not long after Heather's disappearance, a man named Marvin Dill Jr., who went by Marty, was pulled over and arrested in February, a full 6 months before Heather was abducted. They cite court records as their source, so I'm going to say this is probably pretty solid. He was stopped because citizens in nearby Evansville were complaining that there was a man in a red and white Ford Bronco soliciting underage girls for sex. The AP reported that a search of his truck showed that he had what sounds like to me a rape or murder kit, loaded guns, rubber gloves, duct tape, and rope. Other sources say he had knives on him. And some sources also say blood and hair were found, but this does not appear in the earliest article, so I think this may have been found later.
However, according to Heather's Charlie Project profile, it is reported that Dill was pulled over as part of a routine traffic stop after Heather's abduction. And when police found all that questionable stuff in his truck, the guns, knives, rubber gloves, duct tape and rope, maybe also the blood and the hair. But again, that is also reported as being found now as well as later. But when the police found all these items in the truck, they ran a check and realised that he matched the police sketch of the suspect in Heather's abduction. But that would mean that Dill would have already been a suspect because the police would have known what kind of truck he drove 6 months prior because it was seen at the crime scene. And I would imagine that they would have checked all owners of such vehicles. And considering Dill was already known to police and had a criminal record, he had previously served time on drug convictions. I'm not sure why he wasn't questioned before this time.
So according to an interview with the eyewitness, investigators showed him Dill's photograph the day after he made the sketch, so that would have only been 3 days after the abduction. So it seems like, again, this reporting, according to what I had read, they narrowed in on Dill really quickly within 3 days.
And something I've just thought of now, if they had the footage of the cars, they would have seen the license plate. So they would have known who owned the truck. Well, I assume they would have seen the license plate. So they would have known who owned the truck. They would have seen Dill come back to the truck. So they would have had him in sight very soon. As you said, they were showing him, they were showing Tim the picture of Dill a few days after her abduction. But officers from the Kentucky State Police Department went to talk to Marty Dill. However, Dill got word that the police were on their way. I have read rumours that a cousin of his was on the police and that's how he found out. However, I haven't found any reliable source to back this claim up. I've only ever read it on online forums about the case. Regardless, before the police arrived, Dill told his wife Tracy to leave. Before she left, he said to her, "The less you know, the better off you'll be." He then allegedly suicided via gunshot to the head. And I use the word allegedly because that is the wording on the FBI case file. I could not find any investigation into Dill's death that occurred to suggest anything other than a suicide, but the words allegedly suicided is what the FBI used, so we will too.
And here's what makes me think there wasn't a routine stop after Heather's abduction that got them on to Dill, and I think the Charlie Project may be misreporting this. Heather went missing on the 26th of August, and then on the 29th, according to Tim, police identified Dill as a suspect. On September 1st, they executed the search warrant, and he allegedly, or apparently, killed himself, whatever the FBI had said. I think police put it together behind the scenes and went to get the search warrant. Somehow he was tipped off they were coming to execute the warrant, and he killed himself. Because this all happened in a week's time. There didn't seem to be time for there to be a routine stop. I really think they moved as quickly as they could here, and while they were at the property, police searched Dill's red and white Ford Bronco. It had been scrubbed clean with bleach by Tracy Dill prior to his death, reportedly at his insistence, but it wasn't cleaned completely, and this is where another conflicting report comes in regarding the hair and blood found in Dill's truck. Heather's mother, Sarah, said in an interview with Missing Pieces that they took 4 swabs of blood from the tailpipe. And I've seen other places say hair was also found, hair consistent with Heather's. But there wasn't enough there to determine whether or not the hair or the blood belonged to Heather. But Sarah feels that there should be enough, especially with as sensitive as DNA tests are today. A grand jury was called after Dill's death. His wife was called to testify, but she invoked her rights under the Fifth Amendment and refused to testify. For those who don't know, the Fifth Amendment prevents someone from incriminating themselves, and it's a constitutional right in the United States. And had she testified, she's saying she would have incriminated herself. Now, that doesn't mean she murdered anyone. We do know she cleaned out the car with bleach for her husband. You would have to assume she asked questions as to why she was doing this, or maybe she noticed what she was cleaning, if it was blood. Maybe she did know more than she was letting on, or maybe there was another crime that was not connected to Heather that she was afraid was going to come up in the questioning. Or maybe she didn't want to be on the stand and open to interrogation and have her words maybe twisted to make it seem like she knew more than she did. Regardless, she invoked her right to remain silent. For the record, Tim did testify in the grand jury. He positively identified Dill as the man who abducted Heather that day on the beach. In some more recent interviews, he's expressed some doubts on this.
We just need to take a quick break for a word about our sponsor this week, FabFitFun.
The FabFitFun Summer Editor's Box is now available. FabFitFun sends seasonal boxes 4 times a year for just $49.99 a box. But in between these seasonal boxes, they put together editor's boxes that are available for purchase. These are newly discovered items and favorites from past boxes. The first thing I like is I like getting mail. I like getting this fun package that's just for me. The second thing I like is that these are all full-size products. You're not getting samples. And the third thing is you don't only get what they want to send you. Now, there are things that are in every box. This summer box is going to include the SpongeGel Papaya Yuzu Boxed Flower Body Wash Infused Buffer for everybody. But then you get to pick. Do you want the Ish Lip Statement Palette, or do you want the Dr. Brandt Pores No More Luminizer Primer? I have gotten boxes before where I keep some of the stuff and I send the rest away, but that has not happened with FabFitFun. I have kept every single thing, and the value can't be beat. Often one item in your box will be worth what you paid for the entire box. So sign up for FabFitFun today to get your summer editor's box. Use my code INSIGHT to get $10 off your first box. Go to FabFitFun.com to sign up and start getting a box for a life well lived. Use promo code INSIGHT to get $10 off your first box. That's over $200 for only $39.99. Go to FabFitFun.com and use my code INSIGHT to get $10 off your first FabFitFun box.
So was Dill responsible? Well, he was said to have a strong resemblance to the eyewitness sketch. However, if you do see the sketch, which I will try to remember to post in the Facebook group, you will see that the sketch is very generic of a hairy bearded man. And Dill was also a generic hairy bearded man with no distinguishing features or marks in early 1994, 1995 in his driver's license photo. However, we do have a problem here. If you look online, there is a photo of Dill that was taken a couple of weeks before the abduction. And this photo shows him cleanly shaven with short haircuts in a buzz cut kind of style, which would mean he actually looks nothing like the eyewitness sketch. If you look at Dill's arrest record from April of 1996, it states his hair colour as bald. There are significant physical differences too between Dill and the eyewitness account. Dill was shorter and lighter than the man seen by Tim Walthall. Although I imagine that height and weight would be difficult enough when the person is right in front of you, let alone across a river through a telescope. Now, this is speculated online that the eyewitness sketch was actually done using a photo of Dill rather than from his memory. Now, Tim has gone on record to say that this is false and that he was shown a photo of Dill after he drew the sketch. As Charlie said, he was allegedly shown the photo 3 days after he did the sketch. And I guess when you are considering whether Dill was involved in the abduction of Heather or not, and he will come up in another theory later, but suicide does look bad on the side of Dill wasn't responsible. But you also have to consider that he was known to police, and as Charlie said before, there is a chance that he thought that maybe they were after him for something else. And since there is no suicide note left behind, we will never know his motivation for suicide.
Although Marty Dill seems to be the prime suspect on online true crime and unsolved mystery forums, and even with law enforcement, Heather's mother, Sarah, isn't convinced. She believes that another man is responsible for abducting her daughter, and it's a man who is a known offender and lived in the same area at the time. Christopher J. Bellow was officially named as a person of interest 9 years after Heather went missing. Bellow first came to police's attention for his involvement in the 1991 murder of Catherine Fetzer. On November 26, 1991, Catherine Fetzer left her home on Lafayette Road in Medina, Ohio. She left a note for her husband of 5 years, Michael. She told him she was feeling restless and was going to do some window shopping at the local mall. When Catherine failed to return home later that day, Michael reported her missing. The next day, her 1985 Ford Tempo was found abandoned near some railroad tracks south of Lodi, Ohio. Police looked at a number of known sexual predators and convicted criminals that were known to be in the area at the time of her disappearance. One that investigators were particularly interested in was a coworker at the factory where she worked, Christopher Bellow. He was taken in for questioning, but he denied any knowledge of what happened. For the next 10 years, investigators would track down Bellow periodically and bring him in for more questioning, again and again, over Catherine's disappearance. One of those times would be on November 17th, 2003. Investigators would find Bellow in Evansville, Indiana, which is just across the Ohio River from Henderson County, Kentucky, which is where Heather Teague lived. And as you might remember, that's also where Dill had been arrested for driving around soliciting underage girls. So we're starting to see a little bit of a connection here, perhaps, but we'll get to that later. At the time, he was living there with a woman and her five children. Bella was already wanted for questioning in several other active cases, including in Evansville, regarding an allegation that he had molested his niece. So investigators picked him up and took him down to the station where they confronted him with new evidence that they had tying him to the murder of Catherine Fetzer.
And this is when Bellow confessed. He now said that he allegedly knew Catherine, but not only did he know her, but they were having an affair. He alleged that on the morning of November 26, 1991, the day she went missing, that she came to his apartment in Medina to break off the affair. He then allegedly lost it in anger. Without thinking, he picked up his .38 caliber gun that he'd only purchased 2 weeks prior and shot her, killing her instantly. Bellows confessed to investigators that he disposed of Catherine's body in a dumpster and that it was, quote-unquote, probably in landfill somewhere, and that he believed that her body would never be found. And to the recording of this episode, he has been proven right. No trace of Catherine or her remains have ever been found. Now, investigators didn't entirely believe Bellow's story. They had questioned a number of informants in the decade-long investigation, and they had reported that Bellow had told them that he knew how to get rid of bodies, and he was known to say, quote-unquote, "no body, no crime." Investigators decided to dig more into Bellow's past, and that's when they came across the disappearance of Heather Teague. Heather looked remarkably similar to Catherine Fetzer, as well as her disappearance having similarities to several other unsolved murders, all involving young, petite, brunette women. But they also all had similar characteristics, and they went missing or were found murdered near places where Christopher Bellow was living at the time, or places where he was travelling through on his work as a long-haul truck driver. With no body, Christopher Bellow was cut a deal with prosecutors that allowed him to plead guilty to attempted involuntary manslaughter. He was then sentenced to 11 to 18 years in prison. And although he has never been charged, he is a person of interest in not only Heather Teague's disappearance, but is suspected to have been working as a serial killer in the area. He is also linked to the disappearances of 16-year-old Christina Porco, who went missing after an argument with her mother in Hilton Head, South Carolina, on November 29, 1986. 43-year-old Mary Custo, who went missing after an argument with her boyfriend in St. Cloud, Florida, on May 5, 1998. 18-year-old Shailene Farrell, who went missing after leaving home to buy some iced tea from the local Pick and Save grocery store in Piqua, Ohio, on August 8, 1994. And 23-year-old University of Cincinnati student Alana Gwinner, who went missing after leaving a bowling alley in Fairfield, Ohio, on December 9, 1997. Now, only Alana's body has ever been recovered. She was found floating, fully clothed, in the Ohio River near Sugar Bay in Warsaw, Kentucky. The car that she left the bowling alley in, a 1993 Honda del Sol, has never been found.
It has been speculated and alluded to by investigators, and it's also in the FBI file, that they may have evidence that links Bellows to Heather's disappearance. Although any evidence they would have would be completely circumstantial, and the only thing that I've seen reported is that Tim said that the man held his hand in an odd way, and Bellows apparently holds his hands in the same way. There isn't really anything concrete to link him to Heather's disappearance or to any of the other women's disappearances. This connection and the thought that he may have been a serial killer, it's pure speculation with no real evidence to back it up, apart from his connection to Catherine and being located in the same area where the women went missing. For the record, despite Christopher Bellows being a person of interest in Heather's disappearance, investigators don't appear to have ever spoken to him about the case. There is similarity between Bellows and the eyewitness sketch, and Tim has said he agrees that Bellows does look similar to the man who attacked Heather. However, he doesn't believe they are one and the same. Like I said earlier, he has backed away a little bit from his 100% sure that Dill was the guy, but he still seems to lean towards it was probably him.
Now, there are a number of theories in this case, and this is one of the few missing persons cases where the theory of running away and starting a new life isn't brought up. But the main theory is that Marty Dill and Christopher Bellow acted together. One abducted Heather and the other was driving the car. As we said earlier, in the video taken by the farmer, it shows a red and white Bronco, like the one that Dill drove, parked next to Heather's car in the beach parking lot. The investigators theorised that Dill drove his car while Bellow attacked Heather and dragged her into the trunk of the car and perhaps continued the attack at the secondary location. Now, if you look at the pictures of the Ford Bronco online, you could see that the trunk would be big enough to fit two people inside and for an attack to take place. The investigators also theorise that either Dill or Bellows may have ransacked Heather's car looking for items to steal at some point. However, if all of this happened, I imagine that there would be evidence of it through the surveillance footage from the farmer. But then again, we do know that investigators had evidence against Bellows, so it is possible that the footage is what this evidence is. There is thought that Heather knew Dill and Bellows through mutual friends, and this was a targeted attack. Or that perhaps because this is a small town and everyone knows everyone, it's just what happens. Regardless, I couldn't find anything beyond what is written on the online forums of users just repeating what they have read elsewhere. And what do we know about when this happens? It's really hard to separate what is fact and what is rumour. But we are referring to this idea that they may have all known each other because it is reported in these forums as part of the narrative.
Alternately, it could have been a crime of opportunity. Here we have a young, attractive woman sunbathing in an isolated area. I personally have inherited the skin of my Irish grandmother, so I wouldn't know this from personal experience. But when I see other people sunbathing, as I'm in my hat under the shade, they often have their eyes closed. It's a relaxing activity for those who don't burn on contact. So I could imagine someone who had the drive or motivation to do such a crime could have seen her and took advantage of the isolated area and her not being 100% aware of her surroundings. Except for this wig and or mosquito netting that was on the guy's head, which it's kind of odd. The wig wasn't completely hiding his hair because Tim could tell that it was bushy hair, so I'm not really sure where this wig and or mosquito netting plays into it, but that makes it seem premeditated. That's not to say he was necessarily targeting Heather specifically or following her. We know that predatory attackers, whether they're murderers, rapists, or likely in this case both, they will stalk a location for a victim. From what we found, with the exception of the unsolved murders and the abductions Bellows is a suspect in, there are no other similar abductions or unsolved murders. If someone did witness a man in mosquito netting and a wig roaming around, you'd think that information would have come out and they would have come forward.
I think that considering we're looking at an isolated area here, there is a chance it was just an optimistic killer or abductor just stalking the area, because eventually someone would come there to sunbake and they would have known that they would have been isolated. There wouldn't be much of a chance that someone else would come by what they were doing.
And the tree line behind this beach is pretty big and it's pretty dense, so it wouldn't be a bad place if you were going to do something terrible and drag someone into the woods to get away or to do something. And one of the things that I think is interesting is that Bello and Dill are pretty neck and neck, even as far as what we can tell, as suspects. Like, the same evidence could pretty much be used against either one of them. It kind of reminds me of the Stephen Avery case, not the murder he was convicted of, but the rape that he was falsely convicted of. It turned out that the man who did commit the rape just looked a whole lot like him. And again, it was the bushy beard and big hair look. That can hide a lot of facial features, and that could really alter the way someone looks. And again, these people were in the same area. They had similar crimes. They could have been known to each other and acted together. In this case is actually a possibility, but I don't think either one of them knew Heather. I think that whatever happened, it was a crime of opportunity, regardless of who was the actual one who did it.
And I think I'm coming to the same conclusion. I'm not saying that Dill and or Bello wasn't involved, but I think it was the crime of opportunity that they had been stalking out the place, waiting for someone to come by themselves, and they took that opportunity.
In August of 2002, on the 17th anniversary of Heather's disappearance, investigators released a statement warning people not to post online about the case. They had a concern that there was a high level of false information on the case by people who claimed to have firsthand knowledge but didn't have this knowledge. And I imagine that's a concern shared by investigators of all sorts of cases today, but today they know it's a losing battle. This information gets passed on and on in Heather's case, even with the warning from police, and it slightly gets changed with each new telling, which can hinder the investigation. The Kentucky State Troopers even went as far as threatening that charges could be sought for falsely reporting on the case. Now, of course, we know this never happened, and a quick Google search of different online true crime and unsolved mystery forums will show you that the information was shared and then shared again and has been shared ever since. But it's interesting the lengths investigators would be willing to go to try to protect the integrity of this case, but also kind of interesting looking back from now how naive they were about the power of the internet discussion group back in 2002, thinking that they could somehow contain it or legally prosecute those who were posting about it.
To this day, Heather's mother, Sarah Teague, continues to try and get answers to what happened to her daughter. She has a small, short blog and an active Facebook page. And in articles where she has been interviewed, she has publicly said that she does not believe that Marty Dill was involved at all. That she believes that police wasted time and resources going after the wrong men. She told Eyewitness News that the eyewitness sketch was only done after investigators saw the video putting Dill's car next to Heather's at the beach So they already had him in their sights. And again, that is backed up by the fact that they showed Tim the photo of Dill just days after the abduction. In February of 2013, Sarah filed a lawsuit against the Kentucky Police Department claiming malfeasance. And what that is wrongdoing by a public official, meaning that all avenues weren't followed up by the book. But what Sarah is claiming in particular here is that she was lied to and that the police basically messed up by having tunnel vision. The case was dismissed a month later as the judge did not believe that there were grounds for such claims. More recently, Sarah Teague has attempted to acquire the 911 calls made by Tim Walthall. She said on the Facebook page for Heather that she did originally listen to the 911 call in 2008, but then she went back for a second listen at the police station in 2016, and it was different this time. According to Sarah, in the original recording in 2008, the caller, being Tim Walthall, says that the abductor had mosquito netting and or a wig on. Whereas the tape that was released in 2016, it doesn't include these details. Sarah and her lawyer also insist that the 911 operator was male during the earlier listening and then female in the 2016 release. Now, either Sarah is misremembering here or there were actually two 911 calls made by Tim, or what Sarah is alluding to here, that the original 911 call was tampered with. Sarah has publicly demanded that the Kentucky State Police share the chain of evidence for the tape for her to review, and she has submitted an open records request asking for exactly this. The police refused to give her this information and they went back to court.
In early November 2017, a judge ruled that the police had to give their reasons for not releasing the tape. They argued it would, quote unquote, hinder a prospective law enforcement action, which, as someone who has filed FOIA requests before, is a pretty common reason given on open cases. But the judge argued that these reasons were flimsy and weren't justified. And we've seen this before as well. Even open cases, after many years, and in this case, a couple of decades, the police cannot use impeding the investigation as an excuse to withhold records. At the beginning of January 2018, the Kentucky State Police were ordered to pay fines and court costs, including Sarah's lawyer's costs, totaling almost $24,000. Over the years, Sarah has dealt with a lot of false leads over her daughter's disappearance, including being told that her daughter was abducted and sold into sex trafficking, that she had been eaten by pigs, that she was buried at the bottom of a well. Many of these so-called tips came from the internet. She has hired a private investigator and even a few psychics to help her find her daughter. In 2007, Sarah Teague had Heather declared legally dead so that she could gain access to the FBI files on her daughter's case. Sarah is still working at bringing her daughter's killer to justice.
Heather Danielle Teague was 23 at the time of her disappearance and would now be 46 years old. She was petite, standing only 5'2" or 157 centimetres tall and weighing 100 pounds or 45 kilograms. Heather had green eyes and long wavy brown hair. Heather's Charlie Project profile makes reference to Heather suffering from a condition known as scoliosis, meaning that her spine curves slightly but is noticeable in her posture. Heather has a round red birthmark on her bottom, on the right cheek. Her feet are flat with fallen arches. Anyone with information about the case can call the Kentucky State Police on 270 826 3312. Or they can call Heather's mother Sarah Teague in Madisonville, Kentucky on 270 824 8343. All tips may be submitted anonymously.
Thank you for listening. You can find us on Facebook at Insight Podcast, Twitter at Insightful Pod, Instagram at Insight Pod, or email us at insightfulpod@gmail.com. You can also support the show at patreon.com/insightpod. And a special thank you to Chesgrave Music for our new custom theme.